My guest is Nadia Owaydat. She's a professor of Islamic thought at Georgetown University and a fellow at the New America Foundation. When you see how politicians, how, say, radio personalities or journalists or others talk about Islam in this country, what is your reaction, given how simple the analysis is and how these giant thoughts are combined into very simple and very inaccurate generalities?
You know, because a lot of the politicians are out of their depth when they speak about Islam and Islamic politics and history and thought, I would advise very strongly that we stay out of the nitty-gritty of the theological debate and focus on what makes America and the globe actually stable, and which is religious freedom. And this is such an important component that is missing from our foreign policy. So if we were to only insist on the very values on which liberal democracies are formed, like separation of religion and politics and religious freedom, then the rest, I believe, would take care of itself. Because religious freedom is really at the core of what terrorism, but also liberals in the Muslim communities are about. It's that notion of who has the right to impose a certain interpretation of religion on the rest of humanity. And if we were to take that right and put it in the individual's heart, that people are free to believe whatever they want, whether it's Islam or not, or this version or that, then that's very essential and really the most critical informing stability would really start to produce a different Middle East. But if we take sides, this version, no, that version, I mean, the Prophet's companions couldn't agree on one version. They waged wars against each other. Aisha, the Prophet's favorite wife, waged war against Ali over whom, you know, the split between Sunni Shia. So if they couldn't agree, we have no chance of agreeing on one version with 1.5 billion people. So let's agree on, especially the U.S. as a superpower, as a powerhouse, it would be much wiser to focus on furthering freedom of conscience. And if you think about the European history, it was only when Europe got that message of, you know, the church, God would survive if we don't enforce people, if we don't enforce religion upon people. It was then that you started to have liberal democracies, you started to have evolution in governance when the church and the government let go of that coercive component in enforcing religion out of fear that people would not be religious otherwise. And that fear is what motivates a lot of the wars in the Middle East, is that if we don't enforce religion, essentially, it may die off. I mean, what does this say about their faith in the power of spirituality or of their religion? That unless it's enforced, it may not survive.
When you spend time in the Middle East, as I have, it's striking. I mean, the country that I've spent the most time on is Lebanon, where I've been 10 or 12 times. And the split between, you know, Sunnis and Shiites is complete. They don't overlap really at all. And what's amusing and weird is that both of them have stronger alliances with Christian. This is talking about politics. You know, the Sunnis and the Shiites don't cooperate on anything politically, let alone business or socially in Lebanon, but they both have alliances with different Christian factions. And that's just an example of how intense the split is. I'm curious, you know, historically, right now we're at this just really awful sectarian moment where Iran and Saudi Arabia are seemingly about to go to war, but it's really a very bad time in terms of the split. But historically, how does today compare to what the split has been like, you know, over history, over the, you know, those 1,000+ years?
So, you know, times are changing, and the mechanisms of change are not, basically, Muslims have not had a lot of say in how times have changed. So in Europe, the nation state was birthed. The notion of, again, religious freedom, separation of mosque and state, or church and state was born. Citizenship, equality between citizens, all of these concepts were very much, are very much alien still to many in Muslim communities, especially in the Arab world. So hierarchy is very much part of the old world where, you know, you cannot, Lebanon had civil wars in the 19th century because the notion of equality between Christians and Muslims, and it was very foreign, and it created such tension that the French basically said, okay, well, you have your own rules and you have your own rules. Imagine if in America, Irish Americans have their own rules and African Americans have their own rules. And I mean, it would be a chaos. And you're not really a citizen of your country, but you are a citizen of your sect. And your sect decides for you who you marry, who you vote for. So it's states within states. And it's actually causing it's causing instability because the modern world is not really conducive to this states within states. You either have modern states or you cannot have competing authorities, if you would. So this is why you see that the Middle East is truly undergoing a phenomenal shift because you have young generations that want to be able to just be citizens and equal citizens and want to vote for whoever is most competent and not only whoever is within their sect. So the change is causing a lot of strife, a lot of instability, because it's the old battling the new. And it's most likely will go on for generations until modernity truly sinks in and becomes a way of life for the Middle East, because there's no way it can go back to pre-modern times. But the change is definitely painful and slow.
Do you expect to see such a change in your lifetime?
I do, actually, because I do research on social media and how young Arabs and Muslims in Muslim communities perceive themselves and how they want, what direction they want to take their countries into. So if you look, young Arabs, so basically in the Arab world, there are about 500 million people who speak one language. And if you look, and they're also, what's really interesting is that they are the most active with social media. There is not another group per capita that is more engaged in sharing, in commenting, in downloading YouTube videos that are educational. So you have a revolution in information. You have young people who have access to the world's knowledge, and they don't want to be held back by outdated tribalism and sectarianism. And how do we know this? If you look at the most watched YouTube channels in all of the Arab countries, every single one of them, the most watched is practically equivalent of Jon Stewart in America. So it's people, comedians, satirists who are challenging through satire political, religious, social authoritarianism. They are challenging these norms. They're making fun of these norms. And this is, I think, the beginning of a much more massive change that is taking place.
My guest is Professor Nadia Owidat of Georgetown University, where she's a professor of Islamic thought and also a fellow at New America Foundation. You know, last question. You know, one of the things that has puzzled many, including myself, is why the extraordinarily rich, moderate voices of Islam have been so overwhelmed by the messages of you know, Al Qaeda and ISIS, in the sense of you just don't see those clarion calls for Muslim moderation reaching certainly an audience in the West. Why is that?
There are several reasons. One is, unfortunately, most of the, and I'm talking about the Arab Muslim countries, most of them are still authoritarian. So intellectuals who aspire to renew and update and contribute to reforming Islamic thought are not free, really, to preach their messages of moderation. In fact, many of them attempting to do exactly that have been persecuted, imprisoned, or even killed, shot dead, like what happened with Faraj Foda, a Muslim Egyptian intellectual who aspired to challenge extremist political Islam. This is one thing. Another thing is, unfortunately, with petrodollars, Wahhabism specifically, so very intolerant interpretations of Islam have enormous amount of funding and backing. They have a lot of TV stations. So if you grew up in the Arab world like I did, you're really inundated with this very intolerant Islamic interpretation. And it's not just in the Arab world. So I meet friends from all over the world who also grew up in Muslim communities. They all speak of similar experiences of having their communities basically taken over with very well-funded and very intolerant Islamic interpretations. So there's the lack of funding for the moderates, there's the lack of freedom for the moderates, and lack of support even from the international community. Somehow, a lot of the scholars I speak with, they complain that even in Western academia, when they are seen as less authentic because they are more moderate. So practically, unless you are a fanatic, you're not an authentic Muslim. And that's a huge challenge. So internally, you don't have a platform. Externally, you're discredited because you're not hateful enough, violent enough. So these are real challenges. And a lot what's happening that gives me a lot of hope for the future is that now with the internet and social media, a lot of these scholars are going directly to their masses through social media and through the internet. They no longer need to have state television, and all the stations in the Arab world are practically all are owned by governments. A lot of them are the Gulf governments, who are the most conservative. So, but now there are kids, essentially, or young scholars who are having a lot more viewership online than very well-funded television stations. Wow. So the internet is leveling the field, which is phenomenal, because it's essentially the battle of ideas online. It doesn't matter how much funding you have or not. I mean, to an extent, of course, you can have a much better website, much better advertising, etc. But still, the power of your own ideas can go far, way further than they did before.
Well, let's end on that hopeful note. Professor Nadia Oweydat of Georgetown University, thank you very much for your insights and your knowledge.
Thank you very much.